Could quite possibly be the best television show in the history of the world.
It's right up there.
I was just telling you off the air, every single night, one or all of us watch an episode of Seinfeld. Maybe one episode, maybe three.
Yeah.
Every night before we go to bed. It's like a nice little nightcap where you don't have to really think about it.
Sure.
You laugh. It's a great way to end a night.
Yeah, I agree with you. Guess what, Wendy? There's a new book that talks about exactly that. It's called Seinfeldia. The author, Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong, joins us right now by way of the telephone. How are you, Jen? Thanks for being here.
I'm great. How are you?
We're excellent. I'm not surprised that this got on the air, but I'm surprised that it became the big hit that it became, that it became the number one comedy on television. That's kind of shocking to me. Is it to you?
Yeah, it definitely is. It was a huge reason why I wanted to write a book about it, because it kind of makes no sense. If you especially look back at the culture of the time, late 80s, if you think about 80s sitcoms, we're talking about things like Silver Spoons and The Facts of Life. So this was so, so different, and it really doesn't make sense to me that it was a mass hit. It makes sense to me that it should have been a cult hit, but
right.
It turned into a mass hit.
And Jerry Seinfeld is very funny to me, but in my opinion, definitely, in many people's opinion, not the funniest one on the show. It was the whole ensemble that really brought that thing to life.
Yeah, I've written a lot about sitcoms. I wrote another book about a sitcom that was about the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And the thing that I've definitely learned is that it's so magical when you get the right cast together. And even a really well-written show can't quite make it if you don't have that cast magic. And this one might be the best, one of the best for sure, we've ever seen.
The night that it premiered, Jennifer, I did stand-up comedy for 10 years, and I was working at the Improv in Los Angeles, and Jerry came in and did a guest set at that Improv, and that first night, and the show at the time wasn't called Seinfeld, it was the Seinfeld Chronicles, everybody was asking him, what do you think, what's going to happen, and he just said, I don't know, anything can happen, we're hoping for the best.
How did he say it?
I don't know, it might be good, it might be a hit, I don't know. So we were all so happy for him that it didn't just take off. It really took off.
Yeah, it really should. And as you were saying, it really shouldn't have, not just because of the way the show was, but, all signs pointed to, this is not great. It ran for one episode in the middle of summer, the day after a national holiday.
How about that? And Noah Lane Bennis, that first episode.
Yeah. It's very weird. I don't know if you guys have watched the first episode lately, but it's extremely strange to watch. It's not quite all there yet.
Why do you think the decision in that first season or two, they showed a lot of Jerry doing stand-up, and then that kind of melted away? What was behind that, do you think?
Well, the original idea, and I think it was a good one, was showing how a stand-up kind of gathers material from his everyday life and then puts it into his act. So we would have to see his act at the end. That's the whole point. As they went on, they kind of developed a different formula for the show that was way more interesting. And what started to happen is it was really jam-packed, those scripts. And they needed to take anything out. One of the writers just told me recently that the reason they spelled yada yada with one D instead of two was to save space in the script. this is what we're talking about.
Wow.
Yeah, so the easy thing to do, right, when you're first trying to figure out what to cut, is to cut the stand-up sequences, especially once they realized this was more about giving each of the main characters a crazy plot line that would, and then kind of bringing them all together at the end. That's what was cool and interesting about the show. So they eventually lost those.
It's funny. My boys are just teenagers, but Mom and Dad always watched it, and they love it. And I mean, there are moments in my household when somebody gets frustrated with another, and I hear them go, "Jerry!" it's just the funniest thing.
Mm-hmm.
This book is definitely sponge-worthy, I will tell you that. I was trying to think of some of the best moments, and I mean, you can't think of one or
There's
two.
Too many.
There are hundreds and thousands.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true. People keep asking me in interviews what my favorite episode is, and I always preface my answer by just saying You know what? I'm going to give you one, but it's different every time. So if you look at my interviews, I've given like different answers every time. And then someone will answer, will like mention another one to me. And I'm like, oh, someone just mentioned the dingo ate my baby me yesterday. And I was like, crap, I haven't even been thinking about that episode, but I love that episode. So, you know, it's like, if you go through that, it's easier to find like, oh, here's one or two episodes that aren't the greatest. But the rest are so good.
You know, one of the strangest things about this, Jennifer, is at the time, America didn't really know Larry David all that well. He was on Fridays for a couple of years, which was like a Saturday Night Live ripoff. And he was a writer on Saturday Night Live, and that didn't go well. But he was like not a struggling writer, but he wasn't a highly successful writer. So how did it come to be that he and Jerry hooked up to create this masterpiece?
I mean, this guy, you know, he's a genius, but goodness, doesn't he owe a lot to Jerry Seinfeld?
Yeah.
Because Jerry was the one who had been approached by NBC. He was pretty mainstream in terms of comedy, you know, at this point. Like, he was on his way up, you know. He was on a lot of the late night shows and stuff. So,
and Benson. I remember him being on Benson for a while.
What?
On Benson. Yeah. That was really not good.
Yeah, terrible.
I really recommend looking at clips because it's hilariously bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was on his way up and kind of just said to his friend Larry David at the club one night, hey, there, you know, NBC wants to do this thing. Do you have any ideas? And it turned out he did. And it really worked out great for both of them. It's such a just one of those weird little moments where you're like, God, if he hadn't seen Larry David that night, we may have never seen Seinfeld as a show or as the show we know and love now. So we're very lucky that he had the sense and the intuition to do that.
And George Costanza, loosely based on Larry David, is that what's supposed to be? Because now that I know Larry David better, I guess I see some similarities.
Sure.
But George has taken it and built it all on his own.
Yeah, it was definitely an evolution, like so many characters on television. Really, first Jason Alexander kind of thought he was playing Woody Allen. That was the best vibe he could come up with for, you know, having read the script, it's very wordy and neurotic. So that was what he went with. And you can actually see in the very early episodes, if you watch him, you can see he's almost doing a straight Woody Allen impression. And then he figured out it was Larry one day, because Larry said something like, of course someone would do that. I did that. You know, and he was like, oh, okay. And then he started to kind of go in that direction. And then I think it just became its own thing. And honestly, I mean, I think both the George persona and even to some extent the Larry David persona on Curb Your Enthusiasm have to be exaggerated versions of him. I don't think he really is that way like 24/7.
No, impossible. Michael Richards. Hope. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jennifer.
No, I was just saying that. Let's hope.
Michael Richards got the part because he knew Larry David from Fridays. They were cast members on Fridays together, right?
Right. And he did have to come in and audition, of course, and get network approval and all of that, but he's just, you know, he's it, right? He's
yeah.
So brilliant. He's so perfect for that role.
The way, and it's almost an artistry, the way he choreographed his entrances, like the way he would open the door and look so panicked and close the door. And I know it was choreographed. He would talk about how he wouldn't just come in and do it. He would work on that. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, this is one of those, like, crazy genius situations, right? He just, I don't know how he even comes up with that stuff. All that stuff was him. That was not in the original character. That character is based on a real guy, Kenny Kramer. There are a lot of similarities, you know, between the real guy and the character, but that's definitely not part of it. He, you know, Michael Richards brought that part of his genius to playing that character. And I really feel like that was so important to that, the chemistry of the cast, because the rest is very kind of talky, you know?
Sure.
So this is perfect balance.
You know what's weird is, like, now that I watch it at a different time, when it first came out, Kramer to me was like, oh my God, check him out. He is so funny. He's mm-hmm. so off the wall. And then I started really liking Elaine because she was just, you know, hanging with these guys and really holding her own. And now as I'm watching it, George is just my all-time favorite.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, as you change, as you mentioned, Bill, you reread books and you're
yeah.
a different person when you read them. Your favorite characters change, but still, all in all, one of the best shows on TV. Still
yeah,
on a
definitely.
Million times a day, too.
Yes, that's part of, I mean, that's a huge part of the fact that I could write a book about this and people could care. and the fact that it kind of really does live on in our culture every day. You mentioned how your teenage sons are watching it now.
Yeah.
I think that's really important because that's how it continues. I remember watching All in the Family reruns with my parents. So I think it's very similar in that way. This is how its legacy kind of lives on in the culture. And now it's on Hulu, and I could hear my neighbors who are in college watching totally like binging it. And for a while I was like, please stop. Oh my God, I can't do that right now. But lots of smoking pot and watching, binging Seinfeld next door to me right now. So
Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong's book is called Seinfeldia. It's available wherever books are sold. You can stick around for a little bit, Jen. We have more questions for you. All right, good. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's WGN.
Witch woman.
If you're a Seinfeld fan, boy, have we got the book for you. Seinfeldia. Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong has written a great book about everything having to do with the Seinfeld show. Makes a great Labor Day gift. Labor Day is coming up. You don't know what to get your loved ones. Get them this book. Jennifer, at some point in the show, Jerry is pitching the network along with George on a TV show about nothing. It's almost like a mirror looking at a mirror. How was the network along the way as they were developing the show and the show was finding its legs? Was NBC totally on board, or were they tough on Jerry Seinfeld and everybody on the show?
A little bit of both, you know, which is very common, I think. This show, as we were talking about, kind of shouldn't have happened. So the fact that it did and that they gave it multiple chances is extraordinary. So you have to give them credit for that part. They did bury it in the summer for one episode when it first started, but the next summer they brought it back mainly because one of the executives named Rick Ludwin, who was in charge of late night and specials, pushed for it and specifically got it back on the air by getting rid of one Bob Hope special, which would have been 2 hours, and used the budget to get 4 episodes of Seinfeld made. That's why we have that very strange, no one's ever heard of a 4-episode, season before. And so he got that on the air for the next, in the summer again. So not great, but at least it had a chance. And the way it really started to get a chance was when they saw that people were staying for the new Seinfeld after watching Cheers reruns. And remember, Cheers was kind of the thing at the time.
Sure.
So, and they knew they were going to need a successor to it soon. So once they started to see that, that's when they gave it now a 13-episode season in mid-season the following year, and then it took off. Like, people really started talking about it because the episodes were getting to be some of the classics we already know and love. So that's when, so it is the story, honestly, of a network giving a show a chance in a lot of ways. And it had to find itself a little before it became the genius show that we know.
You know what I love? Rewatching it all the time. I do stumble upon an episode that I haven't seen. There was one recently that I swear I had never seen. George was going to pick up Jerry at the airport and his car broke down. And there was a guy holding a sign that said an Irish name. I can't remember it right now. And George says, let's just take the limo. And then they find themselves at like a neo-Nazi rally.
Right.
And they think George is like the leader of everything. It was so funny. But I, Peter, what's his name from Sports Night was on there.
Mm-hmm. I can't Peter Krause.
Peter Krause.
Yeah, yes. And it's so fun to watch these old episodes and see all these old people, of course, from Breaking Bad.
Sure.
You see him in it. So many of these before they were. James Spader in an episode.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. You, that's part of the fun. I feel like almost every time I watch it through again, there's like another person who's become famous.
Yeah.
And so you find them. This is probably only for me, but my recent find was I've been rewatching The O.C., and which I loved, the teen drama. And then I was watching the episode where Kramer starts his bus tour and Jerry's girlfriend from that episode is Julie Cooper on The OC, which is very exciting for me. So there's always like new random people that you're like, especially the girlfriends, right? Almost every one of those Jerry's beautiful girlfriends.
Oh, sure.
They're real and they're fabulous.
Terry Hatcher, right? Yeah. Isn't that Terry Hatcher? You know, the one particular episode, Jennifer, that astounded me was when Kramer decided to put the Merv Griffin set in his apartment and would pretend to have a talk show every night. Because I just went, this is like a dream. This is so amazing that this is on network television. It's so weird and twisted, but it was beautiful.
Yeah, I really like that episode, too. It's a very late episode. So it's, you know, most of the classics that we all talk about are kind of right in the middle there and tight. But that one's very late, and the show got weird. You know, the show got weirder and weirder in those last couple seasons, I think, because they were like burning through material so fast, and it was like they didn't have Larry David there, and the writers were exhausted, et cetera. But, you know, there were those seasons are where we do still get that amazing, like, where, why Merv Griffin? You know, it's like there's so many things about
so
that. Like,
funny.
What's happening?
You know?
Yeah, sure. What about the disdain for the last episode?
And,
there's
and
so many.
Spoiler alert if people are binging and haven't seen it yet. Just, I feel safe to say that.
I won't give anything away, but fans of the show who had stuck by it through thick and thin all through the years, for the most part, are a little displeased with the way things turned up in the last episode. I'm fine with it, but a lot of people are not thrilled. What do you make of that last episode?
Yeah, first of all, I'm totally a defender of that episode. I think it plays so much better outside the context of the hype that the finale was getting at the time. I mean,
We worked at a radio station at the time, Jennifer, and remember they had the final viewing party and it was happening all over the world, and it shouldn't have happened that way.
That's the thing is, I mean, and we actually hadn't seen that kind of hype for just a television finale before. Television finales barely were a thing before then. Usually shows just kind of faded off the air and no one cared. This was like unbelievable. Paparazzi were scaling the walls to get a shot of like what might happen. Like there was all kinds of craziness. So I think there's nothing this finale could have done short of giving us the meaning of life that would have, you know, pleased people, and they felt, you know, there was just their expectations were so high. And then I think what's great about it is at least it makes a statement. At least it's trying something, you know, it's trying to do something interesting. It's not like a Friends finale, and I love Friends, but it's a kind of show. Friends finale where like everybody ends up happy together, then they move away and they grow up in the end. This is like making a statement, and that's what I like about it.
Yep.
I got to rewatch that. And speaking of Friends, in my opinion, that's the closest sitcom that came to Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And very different, but still, for the popularity and the tuning in appointment television, Friends was that show that did that.
Oh, yeah.
And I know Chico and the Man was written about a comic, you know, Freddie Prinze.
Yeah.
Because I was going to ask if the Seinfeld one was the first time that's ever happened. But what was before Chico and the Man?
Oh, a bunch. Welcome Back, Kotter was after Chico and the Man. But so many, like Bill Cosby was a stand-up, and they would try to find things that worked to his stand-up. There had been a bunch over the years.
Because this was the first time I really, you know, I guess
everybody
that they showed...
Everybody loves Raymond, kind of.
But the fact that they showed him on stage was the first time that really... And I'm kind of glad they filtered that out, because his life just got so much more interesting than him being on stage.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a great book, Jennifer.
Yeah, I do think some, like, people playing themselves as a comedian, like an actual version of themselves with their last name and all of that. That was fairly new. I'm scared to say it was the first, because there's always some weird thing out there, but... you know, that was extremely new, and now it's all anyone does.
But Jennifer, they did it on radio for years, like Fred Allen or Jack Benny. They were essentially playing their stand-up versions as a human.
Yeah.
So what a great book. Seinfeldia is the title of it, How a Show About Nothing Changed Everything. And the author is Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong. Jennifer, great read right there. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. We'll take a quick break and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.